Hey everybody, this is Black Sheep Rising. My name is Conan, and joining me, two new friends of mine, Nikki and Michael. Guys, thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Believe it or not, this is the second rendition of this show. We got about 15 minutes in, and the dog went running for Sasha, who's walking down the hall again, and I'm very leery. He completely pulled a webcam right out of its socket, and I ended up turning a computer off. The good news is that we weren't recording anything. We weren't recording video. Everything else was recording, so that would have been a really sucky show. Gee, thanks for doing what you did. You're still a very bad dog. And
stupid dog!
That drops for you. Yeah. So let's just, you know, talk about what we talked about just 15 minutes ago.
All right. Fair enough.
Nikki, Mike, both brand new here to Keene. Yeah. Mike, you were actually here a year ago.
I was here last year during the summer for a couple months, yeah.
And just didn't pan out? You didn't meet the right people? I mean, what happened?
It didn't pan out. The housing situation I was involved in wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. The property manager was just kind of crappy. So fortunately, I couldn't find a job within those.
Are you too good for your home?
I don't know at this point, to be honest.
So, crappy landlord.
Crappy landlord, couldn't find a job, so I just had to head back because that was the only recourse I had.
Well, we're glad that you came back.
So am I.
it's a good time to be here, I guess. It feels, yeah. You know. And Nikki, you just got here right off the boat too yourself.
Yeah, I flew here on April 27th. Actually, flew to Manchester, stayed there for a week, and then I interned on a farm up in Colebrook for 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then I rented a room in Antrim for a month. I met him there, and now we're both living in Keene.
Cool. So you guys are still roaming around, getting a taste of. You know what cities are providing what, and
yeah, pretty much.
So you've got a much better idea of what's going on than I do. I mean, what's out there?
Well, I really like Keene because it's like a small town, but it's big enough that there's stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
In Keene, of course, there's a lot more like overt, as Jason Talley calls it, throwing oneself against the barricades. You know, the Robin Hooding and whatnot.
Right, right, right.
And I would say in Concord, it's a little more subdued. Doesn't seem to go beyond, like, I don't know, sign waving.
Right, right,
much.
Right.
But
they say that they're doing stuff out there. I kind of believe them, but
yeah,
I'm
sure.
but I'm not sure because, we had mentioned this before we were so rudely interrupted. But I don't like leaving. I like to stay right where I'm at, and focus on my own community. And
yeah, fair enough.
I don't get the feeling that a lot is going on out there.
Yeah, and in Manch, there's definitely more like political activism, like trying to get people in office and whatnot, as opposed to like civil disobedience and building alternatives.
Which is definitely happening here in Keene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's a huge plethora of civil disobedience going on,
yeah.
But I think it has evolved over time. It's not as crazy it used to be.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the crazies have moved out and they're not coming back, and they burned a lot of bridges in the process.
And so if
you're here in Keene and you're dealing with any of the natives, most of them aren't natives, but the people who have been here longer than we have,
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
and those burned bridges are still smoldering in their eyes, and and we're having to deal with that, the aftermath, which is sad sometimes.
Yeah,
I keep hearing about flags that were burned, and I don't know.
Wow,
crazy!
No, didn't hear about that.
Well, someone burned an American flag and a UN flag and a state flag in Central Square a couple of years ago.
Oh,
wow.
And I had a real nice conversation with someone just recently, and she started to figure out that I might be, when I say liberty individual, she took that and then she worked with me. And then she started to realize that I was a free stater.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started wanting to not have the conversation any longer. I'm like, well, what's the deal?
What's
changed? She's like, well, I don't like to talk with you free staters because of that one incident. I'm like, well, what incident? She's like, oh, yeah, one of you guys was out there burning a flag in the middle of
one
Central
of
Square.
You guys.
I'm like, well, duh. I mean, how long ago was that? She's like, yeah, 3 years ago. And I'm like, well, no.
Wow.
That's That's not me. I've only been here a year. I mean, come on now.
It's actually like people lump us all in one category, and if they see one person labeling themselves a free stater doing something crazy, then we're all that crazy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Just that collectivist mentality.
It's just, well, it's just like the Robin Hooders, too. I mean, there's only a small group of people who actually go out and do the Robin Hooding, and there's a lot of us here in Keene, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And we don't all do the same type of activism.
Yeah. Right. I remember once I was Robin Hooding, and I was talking to this lady. I think I was asking her, like, if the city of Keene cars, there was a city of Keene car that had gotten a ticket, and I was trying to figure that out. And I asked her, she's like, I have no idea. And I started going to something else. She's like, oh, what are you bothering me for? And it really shook me, because generally I'm a much more quiet, reserved sort of person.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not the type who gets that sort of reaction, but the second she'd labeled me one of those crazy free Keeners, she just had no problem being completely rude.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, people hold on, and they hold on to their memories, mm-hmm. whether they be bad or good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it's hard to build things. It's a lot easier to destroy than it is to create new friendships and relationships with people. It's really easy just to, you know, blow that bridge up.
Yeah. Some of the most tragic conditions of humanity. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
But you guys just got here this afternoon. You spent most of the day in Concord.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was going on down there, over there?
Well, there were, I'd say, about 20 people around City Hall waving signs about against military intervention in Syria. And there were some people with anonymous masks and whatnot. It was mostly Occupy-centric crowd.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, saw a couple of familiar faces, but mainly it was Occupiers and I think the same Social Democrat crowd from the Bearcat protest.
So, right, right. Yeah. But the Bearcat protest was huge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's huge. I think it was over 100, 150 people.
And that was just the first one. There's going to be another one pretty soon, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think next weekend. I think it is.
Right, right. I hope that it sticks. I know that here in Keene, when we got our Bearcat, there was also a very large crowd. And guess what they did anyways?
They still
got their Bearcat.
Yeah.
They say that they represent us. They say that if we want to work and change the system, we need to go and talk to our representatives, our council members. We need to go and hold signs or talk to people on the streets. Mm-hmm. And guess what? That's exactly what the people here at that incident did, and it was overwhelmingly against. But guess what they did anyways? They decided that they knew better, and that it was for our benefit, you know, and they decided to do it anyways. So I mean, that just shows you how hard it is to actually work within the system, and why some people, especially people over here on our side of New Hampshire, decided, you know what, we're not even going to deal with it.
Right.
We're either not going to be a part of government at all. We're not going to vote. We're not going to run for office, or we're going to do civil disobedience. We're going to put ourselves right there in the crossfire, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, people out there will have sympathy with us. And it'll work in our benefit. I mean, and I can see the schism that has been created between the people in Manchester and people over in this side of the town.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out whether it's complacency on their part. Maybe they find it easier, more convenient in Manch to take care of things through more political avenues. But, you know, I guess the smaller the town, the easier it is to be more on the street kind of activism, vocal. I don't know.
I see my city council members all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I even see some of my reps sometimes. I mean, it's only a population of 23,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to see, you know, your neighbors in the stores or walking on the streets. I mean, we're all over the place. I see you guys all the time, and, you know, I'm just driving around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think the people over in Manch are an older crowd.
Typically, I think, yeah.
It seems like they have dealt with the whole government thing a lot longer than we have, and maybe they might argue that they're grown up, and that they're more and they're more realistic. But you know what? I'm not going to be receiving any of that Social Security.
Well, no.
You know, by the time I'm old enough to receive, the system is already it's already broke. It's going to be even broker by the time I get to that point.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm living a whole lie, a whole life that, you know, why even continue to contribute to the system when it is as broke as it is?
Yeah, like, honestly, at this point, I just want to, like, buy a private island or a private seastead or a chunk of land or whatever and just, like, have my own cabin and take everyone I care about and just, like, say, fuck it to the rest of the world.
Yeah. It might, you know, that's what all the zombie movies, that's what they do in zombie movies, don't they? They get on their boat and they drive out to the cabin.
Yeah, they kind of pack up and try to...
I'm not real crazy about the whole living off the land lifestyle. I grew up dirt poor and on a farm, and I don't want to go back to that. I like technology. I like, you know, I like electricity.
Sure, sure.
It really does make life easier, and it lets you do other things. You know, it's...
That's true.
It's really nice to have. I would definitely say don't let me prevent you from your dreams. I would say go and do exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
But don't do it by yourself. Go, you know, go find those people who are already doing it.
Yeah totally.
Exactly.
A little commune farm or something. I know they're out there.
Right.
And if we don't have them here in New Hampshire, Vermont definitely has them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Nikki and I were talking about this extensively, about how someday we'd like to start something or, you know, establish something on a plot of land and, you know, just live off of it just to get away from all of the crap.
Right.
The rest of the, you know.
Or you can kind of half see it like I'm doing it, because I've got the wildlife out there and the...
Yeah, right.
I wasn't able to get a garden in the ground this year, but that's definitely something I'll be working on next year. I left a huge garden in Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
When I came up here, and I miss it. I didn't have any.
Oh, that's
any fresh produce this year.
That's a shame. Yeah, that's a real shame.
Because I'll tell you what, it really tastes good whenever you made it.
Yeah.
That's just you know, and you know, it might come down to, you know, really really hard times. Pretty soon, and if you don't have this type of knowledge, I mean, it might still be cheaper to buy in a grocery store. I mean, it's going to be eggs cheaper in a grocery store, produce it's always going to be cheaper. But
it's good to know how to fend for yourself if the worst happens.
Yeah, I would much rather you know how to do it now.
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, you often trust your neighbors and friends, and you know, if something were to happen. You could easily have them come by and share your knowledge with them, and as well as, you know, the things you produce.
Exactly.
I think it's really important.
And that's what I was saying. It's, you know, if you're going to do this whole living off the land thing, doing it on your own isn't feasible.
It's,
you most definitely need
very impractical
partners.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's rough.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have someone out doing the field work. You got to have someone building. Mm-hmm. You got to have someone, you know, you have to spread it out a little bit. Trying to do it all yourself. I mean, even the have you seen the Alaskan man who went out in like the 60s and he built his cabin out there on a lake that no man had trod upon? And
not aware. No,
I'll put that in the show notes.
Cool.
When I find it, I don't have readily access to it. But anyways, he went out there and he videotaped everything he did. But he's building his cabins, and he's cutting the trees down himself, and he's fitting them, and it's very neat. It's straight up back to basics. He's making tools. He's carving them.
Yep.
Except what you don't see is the fact that he had all his supplies flown out to him.
Yeah.
And it took him many years. I mean, he went out one season just to cut trees down.
Yeah. Yep.
And then he came back the next season when the trees had been seasoned, they had lightened up, and then he built the cabin. So, I mean, this was many years. I mean, think about it. If it takes you just a year just to build a log cabin.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing in between then? You're living in a tent or, you know, under a palm leaf.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like, I don't know, it's one of those things where, like, for instance, learning an instrument or, like, starting a restaurant or whatever, you just have to really love it. Otherwise, all that effort just isn't going to be worthwhile to you.
Absolutely. It's any type of craft or any art or anything that you do, or even your work.
Yeah.
You're right. If you don't love it, you know, there's a big percentage of that that just goes right out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's a very important rule of life. If you don't love it, stop doing it and do it.
Right.
Like, we were talking before this, I used to do Shire TV.
Yeah, right.
And you know, we were getting a lot of good information out there. We're pretty much, we talked a lot of the keen activism stuff and other things, but it just wasn't fun. So so I said, you know, hey, let's stop doing this. And Darryl's like, yeah, you know what? This is not fun. Let's not do this anymore.
Right.
I said, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, let's do something late night-ish.
Yeah, that's always fun.
And this came out, and I'm having a much better time doing this. Mm-hmm. It is sucking all my life away from me, though. I'll tell you what, man.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah.
I've got projects I got to get working on. Mm. But all right, so Concord, kind of a
so-so turnout.
Mm-hmm.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it is.
So, guys, just got back from that. Yesterday, you were pretty much doing the same thing, except you went further east, went out to the beach. Tell us about that.
Well, it was at this seafood festival in Hampton, and it was just packed. I mean, there were rows of cars, several buses. We had to park like over a mile from the actual festival.
Almost 2 miles away.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Ridiculous. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that place was that big.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than we certainly thought. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm getting used to these 20,000 population towns.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Keene should be a town. It's a city, and that's a problem I have. But,
yeah.
So much bigger, huh?
I'd say it covered a lot more area. I think because of the tourists, maybe it seemed bigger.
Uh-huh.
As is, you know, most beach towns, but, you know.
And so, all right, so, and you said that you guys actually didn't even go in. It was just that big and that crowded that you decided to.
It just at the time it didn't seem worth it, and I don't. Overall, I don't think it would have been. I don't.
Yeah. So we just hung out by the beach and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. Like it was my first time at the Atlantic Sea Coast, and the water it was a lot colder than what I was used to.
And dirtier.
Not dirtier. No.
Grayer.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. It I'm from Florida, so for me, from what I'm used to, it was pretty gray and drab. So, you know, that's just New England. That's what I expected. But
well, I share that in common with Mike. I'm also from Florida originally, and I can't stand the beach.
Yeah, I've gotten quite sick of it myself. I don't dislike it, but I'd prefer not to go there if possible.
I like the hotties on the beach.
Yeah.
That's about it. I don't like sunburns. I don't like sand. Mm-hmm. I don't like salt water.
Yeah.
I like cool, refreshing mountain springs, and you don't get a lot of that in Florida.
No, you don't.
Get that up here, though.
Yeah.
But, so, it wasn't just you two. I think there were a couple others that went up as well, over.
Yeah, Garrett, Graham, and Yuri.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw you guys getting home last night. You looked a little tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was exhausted. I was the one driving. It was my car, so, you know, I did the carpooling.
Wait, it was? You didn't steal it?
Not this time. Shut up, shut up about
keep
that.
Keep that on the down low.
You're
starting a new life, turning a new leaf. It's a new man.
You can't find me up here.
Have you burned your fingerprints off yet?
I'm working on that.
There's a combination of acids that I might know about that we can concoct together. And
let's
dry ice will probably work too, I bet.
From what you've heard.
From what I've heard.
I hadn't thought about that, but, you know, we need to maybe talk after.
Okay. Sure. Okay. After.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, hey, where will we be going with that? The seafood thing. Guys didn't even go into it.
No.
But you still had a good time.
Yeah,
we did. We got to stay by the beach and hang out and enjoy the refreshing ocean breeze.
Yeah.
And the coldness of the wading in the cold water.
The icy coldness of the water, yes.
Well, you guys sound like you're having a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
And last week you went to this thing.
Yes we did. Oh no.
This happened at in Fitzwilliam, which is about 20 miles south of us, mm-hmm. and someone had a little shindig out there for the second time.
Mm.
Which and both of them I enjoyed quite a lot. If anyone knows Darryl, the regular co-host on the show, he cannot stand G. He absolutely hates this dog. He wants to barbecue him and stuff.
I cannot for the life of me fathom that. I love this guy. I love this little guy.
He's so nice. And if you just, he only wants to sit on your lap. He has a little energy problem every now and then. he did cause quite an upset just a little while ago. He was unplugging things here. But I mean, once you get him on your lap and, you know, settle him down, he's such a nice dog.
He just Darryl, chills out.
Darryl wants him to be the studio cat. And there's actually a cat walking around here somewhere, but she won't come in here.
I was going to say, you have a studio cat already, don't you?
Well, she doesn't want to be a studio cat, so this guy heard that there was an opening, and he says, I want to be that guy. And so he got nominated.
Dog would do that, wouldn't he?
I actually set up a Facebook page for him. He's a star now.
Oh, that is awesome.
Nice. Oh, so I'm going to have to follow that.
I'm putting all his videos up and pictures of him and stuff, and I'll get that linked up pretty soon. I think that he deserves it. Mm-hmm. He's a good dog.
I think he does, too.
But so anyways, what went down, what you're looking at is a picture of Daryl. He's got the dog looking all stoic, and Daryl's got a smile on his face, and he's got a peace tea in his hand. These are all things that this whole combination is something that I wasn't planning on that day.
It's a giant contradiction. Just
it is
what I'm looking at.
Most definitely.
I think he's a pod person.
A pod person?
Yeah.
How does that work?
A Martian has like replaced him with a clone.
So he's from that movie, not Screamers, but they scream. Scream. They screamed.
There was a couple. There was the original, which was Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
That's the one.
And then there's another one with the screaming made in the 80s. I can't remember the name of the film, but there you go.
So you think he's a pod person?
Of course. I mean, what other explanation is there?
Maybe he's an agent.
Yeah.
And we're in the Matrix.
Yeah,
and
true.
He is, sent here to infiltrate and make us feel comfortable and to carry on with our lives and not question everything.
And now that you mention it, he is looking quite agent-y
with those
dark
big old
shades
exactly,
on.
Yeah. Exactly. I just don't even know.
I've got to ask him.
Maybe we're going to have a talk with Daryl before he comes back on the show. But I don't know. All right, so anyways, backstory.
Yep.
Why? Why the hell?
Yeah.
Okay, so Daryl went out to this thing. He was going to do Free Talk Live, which you can hear at freetalklive.com, which is an excellent, it's kind of a variety talk show that you can hear here in Keene, and it's all over the place. But Daryl hosts, I think this was Saturday. I don't know if that's his regular night, but he was going to host that night, and Ian left. So he was stuck out there, and no one wanted to drive him back. We're out in the middle of the woods. And so he was begging and pleading with everybody. He's like, hey, I need a ride back. And he's going to pay people money. He's going to I'll pay you whatever for to drive me back. I'm like, man, I don't want to. Because if I was to drive him, I wouldn't have come back out.
Right.
Because it's a whole gas thing, and I've got a big old gas guzzling truck.
Yeah.
So eventually, James Cleveland Robin Hood, who's been on the show a couple times, agreed that he would take Daryl back if he put G on his lap, smiled, and held a peace tea.
You're kidding me.
And Daryl had to think about it.
Wow.
He was like, don't you just want gas money? And James was like, no, I want G in your lap. I want that dog.
Priceless.
I want that dog that you want to barbecue in your lap, chilling. And so he finally agreed to it. And he got his ride back, and I guess the show went all right that night. So
that's funny. Did James force that smile on his face too?
Nope. That's just natural, I think. Or maybe it's a smirk.
Who knows?
I mean, because he's got the glasses and he can't see the eyes, so maybe he's, I don't know.
Glaring?
Glaring or secretly quite angry. I don't know. Possibly.
Having a clue. Picture I like. I'm going to keep rubbing that in Daryl's face as often as possible. Daryl's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a joker.
I can't hear you.
And he comes up with all kinds of good drops.
I never
say anything funny. I haven't heard any of us say anything funny. He just every other word that comes out of his mouth is just hilarious.
Like housekeeping.
Yes, exactly.
Housekeeping.
He cannot pick up a knife to cut a steak
or stuff like that.
Wow,
it's just funny stuff.
That I'd like to know what topic that was.
Yeah,
we were talking about Rich Paul.
Okay,
and being a felon in New Hampshire.
Okay,
you can't. Wield knives, or not wield, you can't possess a knife and carry it.
Right.
Which is, I don't know, it's kind of silly.
It's always silly when I come down to that.
So anyways, Mark of Free Talk Live, who is a felon, has a felony on his record, he can't possess a knife to cut his steak.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I think that he does anyways, but law, in fact, he was in Concord one time at one of these legislative meetings and he had a knife. Mm-hmm. He was like, this is something, look what I'm doing. And you guys, he was trying to explain how laws are stupid.
Right, yeah.
And sometimes they become outdated and they get old and they just don't make sense any longer, and that's the prime example. So, yeah, he had a knife in the courthouse there, and there was officers in there, and nothing happened. So,
speaking of knives, I have a knife on me tonight as well. It's a Bushcraft knife.
Cool. I'm
very proud of it. It's very nice. Wooden handle.
Pull that thing out, man. Show the audience if you can get it with one hand.
This is my knife. It's used mainly for outdoor purposes. I scratched the crap out of it trying to sharpen it last year.
But
it's still doing good. But handy little thing for doing whatever outdoors.
Excellent. I have one of them tool knives that
multi-tool
things.
Yeah,
it's actually a pretty decent one. Actually, I picked it up at an auction for a couple bucks.
All right, cool.
Felt proud.
Yeah,
but yes. If you've if you don't carry them, and people start getting used to the fact that people aren't carrying weapons,
right?
Handguns, rifles. Mm-hmm. Then people, how many rifles do you see strapped in people backs of pickup trucks any longer, or people open carrying, or
you don't see those shotgun racks anymore.
You see it a lot more here in New Hampshire than you do in other places. But
that's true. Yeah.
But if you stop using your rights, then they have a tendency to slip away.
Right.
And if you got it, open carry. But
it's pretty much my philosophy. Plus, it's an all-around good utility. So, mm-hmm.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, it's
so you know,
and that's why I carry the multi-tool. It's
right.
You know, it gets you into things.
Yeah.
So, I say let's move on to this story. Not a story. It's a collection of fan theories, which I just read last week, and Nikki and I were talking last night about it. These are all movies that I like, with the exception of one.
Yeah. Well, I think.
And some of them ended. Oh, they ended kind of strangely. It seemed like they were missing the point, and that there were other avenues that they could have discussed that they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that there are some of these theories have whole pages set up. Some of these movies have whole pages, fan pages set up that are constantly dissecting the movies and the shows, and they're trying to find new content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you know you've created a good story. Whenever the there's so many questions that are I remember Lost, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The show.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And of course I watched these shows way after they originally came out.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So it's always important that when someone at the table starts talking about the show that I haven't watched yet, it's
and like the Twilight Zone. I don't know if you've watched that, but those episodes have a way of just lingering with you afterward, mm-hmm. popping into your head when you weren't not really thinking about it.
The old black and white Twilight Zones. Those very, very cynical. Stupid dog. Very cynical, pessimistic views of life, I thought.
Oh.
I'm gonna have to agree with that, because they often touched on the topics of how humans are animals and will tear at each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, when things go awry. And I never really agreed with that, even as a younger.
I'm not a pessimist, but I'm definitely a cynic.
Yeah,
I believe that we are inherently greedy animals. I think that greed is a natural element.
Mm-hmm.
That we live in. I mean, squirrels are greedy.
Right.
Right. Why does a squirrel have to pack more than one tree with nuts every winter?
Sure.
Why does he do that?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. He only needs one of those little caves of nuts to keep him alive.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he doesn't know how long that winter is going to last.
Right.
Yeah.
It might last an extra month, and if he didn't do the collecting that he did,
mm-hmm.
he would be a dead squirrel.
You've got the next squirrel.
You've got greedy atoms. You've got what is gravity? Why is gravity so greedy the way that it is? It just mm-hmm. constantly wants more.
Yeah.
But I think that, humans are just naturally greedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, but I'm not a pessimist. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's natural.
Well, I think that the greedy attribute to humans is part of the natural self-preservation instinct.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's on that level, I can agree, yeah.
Uh-huh. But most people, if you ask them, mm-hmm. About greed, they would think that they would say that it's sinful.
Right.
That it's not a characteristic that one should strive to have. Because it's kind of a nasty little characteristic. I mean, it's not, But I'm a capitalist.
Yeah.
I'm a free market guy.
Sure.
You know, I know what I know. And I'm kind of a material guy too. So, I mean, I kind of like my material wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not so bad. That's pretty good.
But,
I guess I can forgive you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. I can carry on. So yeah, where are we going with that?
We're going to, each of these, five fan theories, apparently. Let's see what we got first.
Okay, so the first on the list is Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
and that series is over and done with. So I think we can talk about it without spoiling too much. If you haven't seen Harry Potter, just turn it off for a second because we're going to talk about the ending. But anyways, the whole fan idea is that Harry Potter is not in fact the chosen one.
Yeah.
And it's one of his buddies that didn't get a whole lot of mention, and that would be Neville Longbottom.
Longbottom, yes.
So yeah. Anyways, the resident doofus, he's not really good at magic. He constantly forgets stuff. Even Rowling hates him. Rowling. Is it Rowling or Rowling?
Rowling.
Rowling. As evidenced by the fact that she included the synonym for ass in his name. Neville only seems to be there so that readers who aren't smart, capable, or attractive will have someone to identify with. However, just like the shy kid from your school who went on to become a porn actor, later books seem to hint that there might be something more to Neville than meets the eye. And here is the awesome fan theory. Basically, that Harry Potter was just a distraction. The chosen one was Neville all along.
Oh, interesting.
You see, the plot of all seven books revolves around the idea that Harry's life fulfills the prophecy. And here's the prophecy. The one with the power to vanquish the Dark Lord approaches. Born to those who have thrice defied him, born to the seventh month dies, and the Dark Lord will mark him as an equal, but he will have the power the Dark Lord knows not. And these things, as they applied to Harry, but they also applied to Neville. His parents had thrice defied Voldemort, and he was born on July 30th, one day before Harry. So what power does Neville know that Voldemort doesn't? According to the theory, that couldn't be either the power of love, as in Harry's case, or herbology.
I'll go with herbology.
I think that sounds a lot better, too. The Voldemort will mark him as an equal part was a bit trickier, but then again, it wasn't clear how it related to Harry, either.
Mm.
Neville had messed up relationships with his parents, mainly due to the fact that Voldemort had them tortured into insanity.
That'll do it.
Voldemort had some serious mommy issues, too. So in this case, in this sense, Voldemort made him his equal. But the best part of the theory, the part that makes it all come together, is the idea that Dumbledore, the principal of Wizard High, was intentionally allowing Voldemort to think Harry was the chosen one just to protect Neville. While we're not saying they should have just ditched Harry in the last book and turned the other kids into protagonists, it would have been pretty cool to have Harry find out that he wasn't the center of the universe after all, if only because it would have made the character slightly less insufferable. The later books do flirt with the idea, however briefly, and it would have fit right into Rowling's habit of pillaging the first three books to turn all of the one-off magic items and half-serious gags into charm-changing MacGuffins.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I haven't read Harry Potter in a while, so I don't really have that much to add. It's certainly interesting and be a neat twist for, awkward, nerdy Neville to have been the chosen one the whole flipping time. What do you guys think?
I think that if Dumbledore did know that Neville was the chosen, and he, in fact, chose an alternate shield...
Yeah.
Which you know, is brought up. Right. I think that would be kind of fucked up of Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just slightly.
Although, but, it wasn't like he chose to use Harry as a shield so much as, like, Voldemort thought Harry was the chosen one and Dumbledore chose not to, not to change that impression.
Right, right. So Harry is a messiah figure. What if God, and the whole Jesus messiah thing, what if God had an alternate Jesus that was doing his magic on Earth?
Oh man!
And Jesus was just a scapegoat.
Life of Brian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's.
Someone's already come up with this theory. It's already been done. Monty Python. Thank you very much.
Rolling, cheapskate.
I know. I'm telling you what.
Disappointing.
And now for something completely different.
Oh, that was so late. So I think out of all of the fan theories, this one has the most. This one could still work. The movie is over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we've all seen the end, but this one could still be plausible.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like they can make a Harry Potter 9.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And turns out that Neville is like this super wizard. He's like 50, mm-hmm. and he's like in charge of Wizard High. Mm-hmm. He turns out to be the super and Harry is living in Australia and with all his redhead kids. And he's just living a worthless life.
Just a simple wand salesman.
That type of thing, you know, I think being in the center of attention all the time and everyone respecting you and all that, I think that's destructive to one's ego.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you know it, you're not taking care of yourself. You're not making your own decisions. I think you can fall apart after a while.
There are probably several fanfics out there with that premise.
Mm-hmm.
There's way too many of those, by the way.
I always liked the one spin that I did really like about the series was when he found out that his dad was not, in fact, who he believed him to be. Mm-hmm. And he was just this bully. He was the bully of Wizard High all along. Mm-hmm. And his nemesis, Snape, was in fact the butt of the punishment.
Yeah.
And that's why he hated him so much. And I'm like, nah, that makes sense. I mean, that's real. Uh-huh. I mean, it's this, you have a cyclical reaction to life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Where, you know, you have this high and mighty father figure, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. The child sometimes is gets lost in the shadow.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool that, like, Snape turned out to be more than met the eye, because at first it just seems like he's a big meanie, but, you know, mm-hmm. he actually has some depth.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he definitely has some resentment towards Harry, but,
You
know, because of his love for his mother, Snape's love for his mother, I guess that's what turns it around.
Lots of good twists. I think that Rowling did a really good job.
Yep.
There's someone else on this list who is, like, in my mind's eye, is like the anti-Rowling, the writer of Twilight. Stephanie something.
Not even anti-Rowling, just
like the opposite.
Just a nemesis of all that is literary and in novels.
I love any time that Stephen King has anything to say about her. He's pretty much, it's nothing nice. Some of it's very comical.
Burned her at the
Personally,
stake.
It's not really Twilight that I can't stand. I mean, if people want to read crappy books, they can go ahead and read crappy books.
It's the fact that it turned into everyone took over. I mean, everyone grabbed on and leached on. And
it's not even that. It's that, like, well, some of the fans, not saying all of them, have just been so rabid and obnoxious. And, like, even if I just politely said, you know, I don't really care for it, they would just attack me. And I just thought that was so childish. I despise the whole cultural phenomenon.
Yes, that's what happens when you have a fan base to a movie that's gotten way too big for its britches.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. A franchise, you'd say.
Yeah. I actually listened to the couple chapters of the book.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of audiobook listening, and I was disgusted.
Yeah,
I was like, what the hell?
Yeah,
first couple books, and it was like, okay, whatever, but I didn't really get the fuss was about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that. It's her writing skills are not quite up to mass publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the impression that both Nikki and I got.
There was some writer, I think it was on sparknotes.com, he read through Twilight and blogged entertainingly about it, and it was all right and everything. But one thing that absolutely infuriated me, he said, it's so awful, he said that it was Star Wars for the female set.
Interesting.
Yes.
But you like Star Wars, so I don't meet a lot of ladies who even know what Star Wars is. There are some here in our community who have... Well, they know what it is, but they've never seen it.
That is a tragedy.
I guess it depends on which ones we're talking about.
Sure.
If you're talking about the old Star Wars, which you don't have any excuse for not watching because they've been around forever.
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Go fucking watch four, five, and six. I mean, stop.
Come on, guys. Come on.
I mean, George Lucas sold his soul to Satan to get those three movies made, and he did a good job. Thank you, Satan and George Lucas. for doing what you did for humanity.
I appreciate that.
The problem is that George Lucas thought after his three movies were up that he still had it.
Yeah.
And so he decided I can make other movies and, you know.
Well, he took full control in these newer three. Mm-hmm. In the past two, there were different directors.
Right.
And he was a writer on the movies, as far as I know, but he didn't actually direct. In these, he wrote and directed, I believe.
The first
one,
three.
Two, and three.
So he was all there. So according to you, it was more of a collaboration in the originals.
In the originals, yeah, in 4, 5, and 6. That's what I read up on.
Right. And when you're talking about something with that scope, mm-hmm. There we go again. You can't do some things on your own. You need help.
Yeah, you can't butcher cinema like that, especially with a well-respected and creative franchise like that.
Depressing. He really. I mean, there's a lot of people who grew up like myself, who mm-hmm. grew up watching the original Star Wars, mm-hmm. and they had an impact on my life. I've seen them a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And George Lucas truly raped my childhood.
Really grinds my gears, even more than just, you know, the poor storytelling, is that he can't even keep his own damn continuity straight. Like, there are all these little things, you know, between the old trilogy and the new. Like, for instance, the fact that, well, this is actually leading up to one of these alternate fan theories, but the fact that Obi-Wan doesn't remember, like, holding Luke and Leia when they were born.
Right.
Like, there's a part where he's talking to Yoda, and he's like, oh, Luke is our last hope. And Yoda's like, no, there is another. And it's like,
he didn't know that.
Yeah, even though he'd held Leia when she was born.
Silly.
And then there's a part when Leia is talking about her early memories of her mom, who, like, died 30 seconds after she was born. I mean, I don't think anyone's memory is that good.
Well,
Speaking
of Star Wars, and I've linked this on a previous episode, but there is... there's a movie reviewer. His name is Mr. Plinkett.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Plinkett.
And he does an amazing job. He is a hater. He's a 1, 2, and 3 Star Wars hater.
Interesting. Okay.
And he reviews the first three movies, and he does such a wonderful job of explaining why the movies are so fucking ridiculous. I mean, they really are.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, you know, there's one, it's called, like, If Episode 1 Was Good, and it's, like, really well thought out, like, reworking of the plot, mm-hmm. and... just look it up on YouTube sometime. I was quite impressed.
Yeah. More stuff like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This next fan theory is from The Matrix. And the idea is that Neo is, in fact, a machine. You probably remember the end of the first Matrix movie, in which Keanu Reeves learns that he can change reality with his mind because he's actually living in a giant computer simulation. Later in The Matrix Reloaded, he kills several Sentinel bots with his newly mental god powers, but he's not inside the Matrix anymore. And this is why, and that explains my theory, which is that Zion was, in fact, another level of the Matrix.
Right.
And he never actually left the Matrix. He just, like in Inception, he just went up to the next level.
Yeah.
But this theory isn't about that. So what gives? Also, at the end of The Matrix Loaded, one of the evil computer programs makes its way into the real world by possessing the man or the body of a human, which doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it. What's going on here? So here's the awesome fan theory. We've previously told you about the popular interpretation, which holds that the real world of Zion is still a part of the Matrix. Keanu just has moved up from one level of simulation, like in Inception. But before the third movie was released, when Matrix fans were still in the denial stage of sequel grief, there was another more elaborate theory. Zion is a Matrix-like simulation, but one made by humans for the purpose of creating better machines. In this scenario, Neo and his enlightened fellow humans were actually machines all along, and the baffling recursive fight scenes they experienced in Matrix Reloaded were software implanted by the humans designed to teach them to understand human pain.
That's pretty deep.
That's wild. Mm-hmm.
Itself, man. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, essentially, humankind,
mm-hmm.
Which were fearful of a Terminator-like ending, mm-hmm. where the machines rise up and destroy them,
mm-hmm.
Found a way to insert human-like emotions and concepts into the brain of the machine, almost like in their dreams.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let these machines live through these processes and then, humanize them.
Have just basically developed some kind of basic form of empathy, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that would have been an awesome spin.
That would have been really cool.
So here, I mean, every machine movie, including The Matrix, the machines do what? They rise up, they destroy humankind, they mm-hmm. we're all become batteries, and they're running off their machines, the other machines off of us.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been a great spin that I don't think anyone's ever that I've ever seen in a story before.
Not quite something like that. No, it's usually the machines who have the upper hand at the end, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe Blade Runner maybe comes close to that, where the androids were, I don't know, were their humanized emotions really, were they real or were they programmed?
Exactly. Replicants, as they're called, they were created to basically emote everything about a human. They're supposed to be near perfect. Mm-hmm. And after a while, it became so muddled that, you know, you couldn't tell whether they were truly human or not, because their development got so advanced and you were left hanging and wondering who was who and what was
right. Right. Which is, by the way, a regular Philip K. Dick plot line.
Oh yeah.
Is what is reality?
Yeah.
In fact, I'm watching the new Total Recall right now, which I've already seen, but someone mentioned that there was something in there that I need to recapture.
I haven't seen the newer one.
It's not bad.
Okay.
It's not the old one.
I that's what I heard.
But it's not bad.
They
definitely take the fighting scenes to an unnecessary level.
Sure.
And you kind of get lost in what Philip was really trying to capture, and that is the what is reality and what is real and am I real and, you know, those types of questions, you know, that's something you go away thinking about for days, weeks, and then you leave the movie theater watching something like that and you're immediately getting on the fan forums and you're researching theories and what else is out there, and what have other people come up with already?
There has to be stuff other people have said. I want to know what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. I've got to make sense of this.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. Yeah. and that's when you know that you've created something good.
You've created a solid universe, a structure from
exactly.
which you can.
You know, whether it be visual art or a movie or a song or any kind, you know, anything that leaves you asking questions, mm-hmm. you know, you've achieved. Your goal, and as long as people keep coming back for more little bites,
that's it.
So I like that one, and we talk about the Matrix on this show a lot. Some people don't want to evolve and move to the cloud like I do. But all right, so number three is Twilight, and I don't want to talk about it because we've already talked enough about it on this show.
Damn
except
right.
just the answer. The fan theory is Bella was a werewolf.
Yeah,
our part werewolf.
Part werewolf. Oh, yeah.
And that's go with it. And I'll link this article on there, so if you actually want to read it, then it's there for you.
If you actually care about that section,
it's not going anywhere. It's on the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's there. All right, and I'm going to skip Battlestar Galactica as well. Their idea was that Cylons were in fact an STD, a robot STD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to skip that and go straight to Star Wars.
This is a cool one.
The idea is that Obi-Wan Kenobi is Obi-Wan Clone Warrior. One of the most intriguing aspects of the original Star Wars trilogy was the brief mention of something called the Clone Wars. In the first film, those three words alone are enough to change Luke's perception of Obi-Wan Kenobi from cave-dwelling old creep to badass space warrior. The thing is, in those early movies, they never actually told us exactly what the Clone Wars were, which somehow makes it sound even more epic. For over two decades, while we waited for the next three crappy ones, literally the only thing fans knew about it was that it involved some clones and warring.
Who would have thought?
I know, exactly.
Surprising.
Of all the wild theories fans came up with during those cold, lonely Star Wars-less decades, there is one that stands out. The awesome fan theory is the clones were artificially grown Jedi, and Obi-Wan was one of them. Thus, the clone designation Obi-Wan. Picture this. Millions of cloned Jedi knights battling across the planets and spaceships in a badass whirlwind of laser force space death. A Star War, if you will. It makes sense. If you had to clone someone to create an army of warriors, a powerful Jedi would be the most logical choice. According to this theory, the name Obi-Wan Kenobi is actually a transliteration of the serial number Obi-Wan, first in a line of star-warring space wizards. In the first movie, Obi-Wan uses the alias Ben Kenobi, supposedly because he's hiding from the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really make sense. Why would you keep the same last name if you didn't want to be found?
That has bugged me for years.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially on Tatooine, which was Empire-controlled. Mm-hmm. This would explain where the alias came from. It was the same of the original Jedi he was cloned from, and therefore his father. Oh, and it closes a gigantic plot hole in the prequels. The reason the old man Obi-Wan doesn't seem to remember any of these events of the prequels, such as not remembering having ever seen the droids before, or that Darth Vader built 3PO, is that the old man is just a clone. Also imagine the awesomeness of surprise ending they could have included in Episode 2, in which the future Darth Vader starts his march toward evil by pushing the original Obi-Wan Kenobi off of one of those high walkways. They apparently design into every spaceship.
Everyone has one, of course.
I've got one in my backyard.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's impressive.
The chickens are on one side, and you've got my walkway and the death spiral.
Never pissing you off.
So, holy crap, man. I like this idea.
Yeah, that's impressive. This is one I've never heard before, and one I am disappointed I've never heard before.
Of course, as soon as you watch 1, 2, and 3, this is completely... You know, well, I guess you could watch 1. Yeah. No, you couldn't, I guess, because, yeah, you can watch 1, but then 2 and 3, they would have been lost.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of this guy ends up being the... Boba Fett ends up being the original
Clone Warrior. It's actually Jango Fett.
And Boba Fett is his son, the one that, the little kid that's roaming around with him?
Mm-hmm.
Boba Fett is his clone son, but Jango Fett is a Mandalorian, which is like a warrior race of humans.
Mm-hmm.
That terrorized a galaxy at one point. Expanded universe, whatever. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I guess the big question would be, as far as clones are concerned, cloning isn't always... Right now, we're cloning. Mm-hmm. I mean, every day of our lives, we're getting older, and that's what we get from cloning. It doesn't work very well. We eventually die from it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more copies you make of something, unless you can get a perfect copy, which is hard to do, you're going to have...
It's the law of diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
That especially applies with cloning.
Right.
The genetics degradate after a while.
But that would also explain the issues that they had. Why would they have these clone wars in the first place? And they explain it. By the way, all of these theories can be expanded into even deeper,
oh, yeah.
deeper depth.
Oh, yeah.
So you have clones. They're not as powerful as the original.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are more susceptible to being led over to the dark side. And next thing you know, the central planners of the galaxy were trying to create ultra warriors. And what do? The blowback comes and smacks them in the face. And now they're fighting their own creations.
Exactly. Well, there is one thing I will say in the dark side's defense.
Mm-hmm.
They have cookies.
Yeah.
Lightning with lightning shapes on them?
I suppose I'd suppose they're lightning shaped chocolate chips. So
excellent. Excellent. If Harry Potter had a lightning bolt on his forehead the whole time, do you think that he might have been maybe more closely aligned with the dark side?
I was just thinking the same thing. It's altogether possible.
One more reason that Neville was in fact the true Messiah type figure. He was the true chosen one, whereas Harry was just
some dude.
Yeah, any bloke in a movie with a Liverpool accent has to be the hero,
or the butler. Excuse me.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Exactly.
But butlers are good. I wish I had one. So yeah, I like this. I'm glad that I found this page. I'm thinking that
neat stuff.
There's probably something else out there that probably some other movies that have. Awesome fan theory endings.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be on the lookout.
Mm-hmm.
I always enjoy that type of thing.
Oh yeah, tons of fun.
But so where are we at? I think we've about gotten to our time limit. Mm. Unless you guys have some more stories up your sleeves.
Well, there is one thing. I was looking into alternatives to Facebook because, it's so anti-privacy. And I found, this open source social network site called Diaspora.
Diaspora.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because, anybody can set up a server. You can choose which server you have and, how much data you share and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah. And there's actually a group on Facebook encouraging liberty activists to move to Diaspora. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple, agorist pages already on there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it still, has yet to really catch on, but I really hope it does.
Well, is Diaspora a made-up word, or is that something...
It...
that or exist.
The other context I heard it in was like the scattering of the Jewish people.
You're right. It basically means scattering or dispersing.
Uh huh.
Excellent. So you just got on the other day. I saw your post.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about it?
Oh, I really like it. The format is very similar to Facebook. Like, you contact people, like you have people on your friends list or whatever, and then it shows up in a stream, all their posts, and you can like, comment, or reshare.
I'll check that out. I'll tell you what, as far as Facebook is concerned, I never really used it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was on it before I got here, but I never actually used it until I got here in our community, and then there was actually things being said, important things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, still half of it is not really important. It's just, you know, wacky this, wacky that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get a lot of my stories from there, and people are...
Now, I'm not sure what use it primarily for, Conan, but I use Facebook pretty much just for the particular pages I follow.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens that I add friends every now and then, but otherwise I don't talk much.
Yeah, I mean, I got like 200 friends or something, and and most of them are turned off. I don't get their feeds. I mean, I can still, if I go to their page, I can see what they're doing, but I don't get their feeds in my feed because, good God, that would be overwhelming. I have a hard enough... Yeah. I have a hard enough time filtering through 30 people.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Turn off the email notifications. Just.
Oh yeah, that too.
In case you don't know, you probably do, but.
What I always do is when you like a Facebook page because it says something witty, like I hate when you wave to someone they don't see you and you feel stupid, and the page sends you like a barrage of like just stupid ass pictures that have nothing to do with the topic.
Right.
And even if you get like, I don't know, maybe 5 of those pages, just the barrage of stupid links can like totally bury everything you actually give a crap about.
Especially if you go and take the time to actually read every one of them, and you're like, all right, that's stupid. What the hell? I just wasted 3 seconds of my life. I need to read in the next one. All right, another 3 fucking seconds of my life. Thanks. Before you know it, you're there for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And the ads, Facebook, please stop trying to market Budweiser towards me, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't drink that American swill. So.
You know, just recently I got an ad for friggin', it was called Are You Ready for Hillary 2016.
Yeah, I saw that.
And, you know, I'm a fucking 19-year-old, you know, female free stater. I guess because I'm a 19-year-old female, I love
That's
Hillary.
That's it. That's it.
Of course.
You must love Hillary. Facebook says so.
Yeah.
I get weird ads these days too. And this is a recent thing that's just been popping up. I don't know what I typed, you know, yesterday or whatever that would have, you know, flagged that.
Yeah.
That type of response.
It's unbelievable.
Some of them make sense. It's like, all right, well, I was doing that Google search the other day. And don't you like that Skynet /Google, you know, is learning from us. And every time we type something, I mean, it's kind of good, and it kind of sucks.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say, from my perspective, it mostly sucks. But I've noticed that happening more and more recently over the past months. So, scary.
Question is anyone, because I get these ads, and it's very similar to something that I might have looked at. The advertisements don't work on me.
The advertisements have never worked on me. If I like something, I like something. If I don't, I don't.
Yeah, the only time they work on me is if, like, I honestly haven't heard of the thing before and it's in my general interest range, so I'll be like, oh, I'll research that. And then if I discover that it sucks, I don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it kind of works on me, but I'm not the type who will just see an ad and go, oh, I'll buy this thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, ads have an opposite effect on me.
Oh, yeah?
If I see an ad too many times, unless it's very creative, like a Geico commercial, if it's just a commercial that I see repeatedly over and over and over again, I will have an opposite effect on me, and I will boycott it.
You start despising the brand.
Oh, yeah.
With Conan, we're really similar in
that way. It's the same thing like a politician or something who comes and, you know, bothers me, or a door-to-door salesman, or someone on the phone, a telemarketer.
That
first thing I'd be is like, "Hey, look, you made the absolute wrong mistake calling me because I will because I'm going to boycott your product for the rest of my life."
Do you remember a few years ago there was this product, Head On for headaches, and the slogan was, it was like this thing that you'd put on your head, and the slogan was Head On, apply directly to your forehead and repeat like 5 times in a row, and like it made me want to never buy the thing ever.
I hear some of these advertisements like on the radio, which we listen to at my current work location.
Sure.
And I hear it every single commercial. It's like, good God, are you guys really selling? I mean,
I don't know. Is your market really that, you know, desperate for that particular thing you're trying to?
But I don't know. I mean, these their marketing teams are people who have gone to school and they've learned all these things and they've studied big thick books. And
I just don't get that. So, some of the modern marketing campaigns I've seen for some products are just asinine. Mm-hmm. I mean, these creative teams should be fired sometimes. It's just pet peeve.
Same here. So, Diaspora. Say that again.
Diaspora.
Yeah.
I'll link that as well, and I'll look into it. It sounds very interesting.
We just signed up recently, actually.
Yeah. Excellent.
Pretty cool service.
So, I think that's about it.
All right.
We're going to turn this in music on. This has been Black Sheep Rising.
Right on.
Nice theme, man. Great Escape.
You get it.
Yeah.
I had to explain it to Daryl last week.
Oh, man.
He didn't get it, and he didn't like it. He all he hears is the military theme. I'm like, well, yeah, it's a military movie, but it went beyond that.
Yeah.
They were being imprisoned by the man, and they spent every second of their days trying to escape
Finding ways to escape, yeah.
And it was, some of them were very creative, and some of them turned out to be a little dangerous, and some of them lost their lives doing it, but that's what the whole theme of the movie was, to escape, and... Yeah. I know it really fits the way that in my life, but you can check out all these. We only talked about one article, but you can check out that article in the show notes. You can find that at blacksheeprising.org. That's going to be the location of the video and the audio. You can also catch us on iTunes and on Stitcher. If you want to have a conversation with us, head on over to Facebook. We're at blacksheeprising.org on that site. If you've got to email me, show@blacksheeprising.org. And you guys have anything you want to plug? Still kind of new.
Not particularly. We're new, so guys are
still putting down boots.
Yep, exactly. So, you know.
Be excellent to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. And stay metal.
Right. Mickey, Michael, thanks for coming on. I'm sorry that I took away 15 minutes of your lives there in the beginning.
Overall worth it.
I do have the audio. Maybe we can do something special with that.
I
could put it in the Easter egg show notes. Not show notes, but the
bake it
show.
Into a giant cookie
with a lightning bolt on it.
Yeah.
Yes. Dark Side will appreciate it.
Excellent, guys. Thanks so much for coming on.
Okay.
Nikki, how much you know about this song that I'm going to close on?
Not that much. It's the only Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song I've really listened to, but it's in drop D, and like it starts with that D chord, and then it goes like to like the lower D, and it sounds really freaking awesome.
He's a guitar player.
Yeah,
yes, he is. Fellow artists. Young is in this particular song. All right, that's what I wasn't able to determine. Mm-hmm. I know he's on this album, but I'm pretty sure he's on this song. It's called Carry On. Mm-hmm. I tell you, one thing I did find out researching this song was that all of their live renditions, horrible.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they're just like screeching old owls.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm like, all right. And I'm listening to when they're older. And I'm like, all right, well, it's just because they're older and they've lost their touch. Mm-hmm. So I listened to some of the original versions, and good God, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's like, how stoned out of your minds were you when you were playing these songs live?
Yeah, that's a disappointment, man. There are a lot of bands that sound great in a studio but just aren't that great live. Like Dylan is one of them. Like, he just brilliant poet, brilliant artist, but just not that great of a performer.
Yeah.
And then there are other bands, like for instance Led Zeppelin, where, you know, their recordings were basically live albums, like even the studio. Like
right.
Jimmy Page did most of the production work, and he said about Led Zeppelin 1, I was basically recording a live album.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect. Whenever I find an artist, I mean, there's lots of artists that I like, but when I hear him live, and it's like, oh my God, that's
exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
Bowie, you too, he's really good live.
You truly are someone who is, you know, crossed that line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is, you know, with technology, which I love, can really make, you know, screeching barn owls sound like, you know, cherubs singing from the clouds.
Beautiful melody from the heavens.
Exactly. And this song in particular is very beautiful. It's got terrific harmonies.
Yeah.
And it's got a nice little message too. And this is something that I grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, I grew up listening to this song. I had this album when I was a young guy, and I heard it on the radio, and I was like, I've heard that before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's Yes. And so I went to my Yes collection, I went on Spotify, and I'm looking through all the Yes songs, and none of them added up. I'm like, no. Who is this?
Yeah.
So I spent a whole evening, I must have spent a good hour and a half trying to figure out who this was.
Oh, man.
And then finally, you know, I went to the radio station, and I was trying to look through their playlists.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
couldn't find it, and I was just bashing my head, and I only remembered the Carry On or the Something About Love. Mm-hmm. We'll find a way.
Love is coming to us all.
Exactly. And so I looked that up, and I finally figured it out through the lyrics. Thank you, Google. Thank you, Skynet.
Uh-huh. I like it because it's a breakup song, but it's not like a I'm going to slit my wrists and mm-hmm. never be happy again sort
it's a,
of thing.
It's a hippie breakup song.
Yeah, exactly.
They move on, and they, you know.
Yeah.
There's going to be someone else out there.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe not. But why let you realize it's, you know, what are you, I mean, how are you providing anything good in life after that? Uh-huh. Unless you're a horrible person, then go ahead, slit your wrists.
But, yeah.
I mean,
just do it. Do yeah, it.
Get it over with. You're making all our lives miserable. So I am glad that I found that out because I really wanted to play this song for this episode. I thought that, for some reason, I thought Nikki was going to be a big fan. Turns out, I got a good eye for these things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, you've been watching Black Sheep Rising. We're going to be here next week because that's what we do. Actually, hold on. We're going to have a party next Saturday.
Oh,
here. Yeah, couch burning party, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
I'm down.
I'm thinking about, I was talking to Daryl about having a show on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, that'd be rad.
And maybe having like changing seats, like everyone is here can just come and sit down. I don't know if I'll be the best host during that hour and a half or whatever. People mm-hmm. are like, where's Conan at? Oh, he's doing a show in his room. And it's like, but it might work.
I mean, I'd definitely try it, man.
Cool.
I mean,
sure.
So you might see us next Saturday. Yeah. And not on the our regular Sunday night, and the sun will be coming through the windows, so it might look different in here. So get ready for that, people.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you've been watching Black Sheep Rising, Nikki, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a ton.
Guys were good guests, panelists. You know, you're more than welcome anytime you want.
Awesome. Sure. Sounds great.
Excellent. I hope you guys stay in Keene.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. You guys take care. We'll see you next week. Love you. Take care. Bye.
One morning. I woke up and I knew it all. A new day, a new way, and new eyes for all. Lord, the way of the mind can go. The sky is clearing and the night is bright. The sun, he come, the
There's a lot of water in Florida, which is something that I don't see here. And there's the closest big lake. Well, there's a stupid dog. Let's see if that shot is still good. And that shot is not still good.